slechte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a digital transformation podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations grow business value in a digital world. Episode 8, Reaching Market Faster Through Governance. In this episode, we'll take a closer look at what API governance means for organizations that must quickly navigate disruption while continuously mitigating risk and aligning their teams towards a common business vision. Hello, I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud, and joining me today are two global digital transformation specialists out of our London offices, Rob Parker Cole and Andy Withers. Welcome, Rob and Andy. How are you today?
Hey. I'm great. Thanks, Chris.
So today we are going to talk about governance, and especially governance in a world fueled around disruption, which I think we can all relate to. So when I say governance, right off the top, Rob, what is governance if you could put it into one sentence?
Governance is balancing time to market with organizational risk, or risk to the organization. So how do you get your products and services out the door and iterate them as rapidly as possible to meet customer demand, whilst balancing that with threats to the organization, threats of doing something wrong, messing up in front of the customer, and course correcting for that? So that, for me, is where we are.
Andy?
I'd echo the same sentiment. For me, it's about risk. It's about how do you control the risk that has the serious potential to hurt you, and how do you do that in a way that kind of maximizes your ability to do things quickly. We all want to go as quickly as we can possibly go, but there are reasons why we shouldn't just run as fast as we might want to run. So it's about controlling the risk and just tempering that ability to run as fast as you possibly can.
Now, I would say some would argue that putting governance in place would slow that process down. I mean, you're talking about let's get to market as fast as possible. And I agree. I think a lot of organizations need that ability to either get to market or pivot as quickly as possible. But I'm sure there's several people listening who are going to say, yeah, but governance is putting those blockades and barriers up so that I can't get to market faster.
So it absolutely can be. My background is working in banking. And at its worst, the worst example of governance I've seen is where you would have a 4-week lead time to every release, where somebody would be checking that you've crossed the T's, dotted the I's, done everything right. And for me, that's going too far. That's preventing you from being able to take opportunities in the marketplace. And it becomes a massive time suck for the organization. And when it gets that bad, you end up with people who try and circumvent the process. Things become, I don't know, emergency releases. We have to do this as quickly as possible just to get past those, as you put it, those blockades, those barriers, and get the job done. So yeah, it can be a horrible, horrible process like that. The flip side of that is when you get it right, governance almost becomes something that's done invisibly. You only notice it's there when you bump into the edges of the guardrails. The rest of the time, it's nudging you along in the right direction and actually helping you do things right, helping you do the right thing more quickly.
I totally agree. And Andy, it almost feels like there's some sort of balance, like get to market faster or make sure that you're well protected, security, risk. Is it one or the other?
So to my mind, those two things are not diametrically opposed, right? You don't do one or the other. You do some balanced combination of the two. And that might be different for different organizations. You might find that in a heavily regulated environment where the cost of making mistakes is high, that you might have to temper that desire to run fast with more control. But in a less regulated environment, you might not do. For me, it's about that, the kind of Goldilocks analogy. It needs to be not too hot and not too cold. It needs to be just right. And there's no single definition of just right, to my mind. It's different for your organization, and you have to make the decisions about what constitutes too hot and what constitutes too cold for your organization. That analogy, I think, is a good one, but it's bitten me previously in the past. So I used exactly that analogy with a large German car automotive organization, and they absolutely did not understand the Goldilocks reference. So had to pivot relatively quickly to a car-related analogy of you wouldn't drive your car without your hands on the steering wheel, which might be one extreme end. Equally, you wouldn't drive drive your car with both hands on the steering wheel, gripping as tight as you can. Everybody has a different driving style, but you would find something that allows you to maneuver and to change lanes when you need to without kind of risking certain death by careering off the road.
Yeah, or we can take that in another direction and we can say, how about tires? If your tires are too small, you have certain risk, unable to drive safely. If your tires are too big, same thing. Maybe you get stuck and you can't go anywhere. If the tires are just right, though, you can get to where you need to get to.
Analogies are great, but they fall apart when you spend too long on them.
That's I've heard of somebody getting the Goldilocks analogy, being bitten by Goldilocks.
I'm pretty sure I've got a slide deck that's got a Goldilocks slide in it.
Let's come back to the governance side of things. So yes, absolutely, there's the balance to be struck. But I think what really helps is if you think about the values that we have within Apogee around governance. So we have four. So empowering and enabling over enforcement, guiding and supporting over policing, trust and federation over centralized control. And the value I think is most applicable to this kind of topic where regulated environment, you need to have more governance, is accelerating progress over slowing change. How do you ensure as an organization you can accelerate progress while still hitting those compliance or regulatory governance topics? And I think for there, thinking about things like automation is really key. So if you're trying to apply governance, and we can talk in a minute about what governance looks like in these things, how can you make that as automated as possible? And if you hold that as a guiding principle when you're trying to think around governing an API program, you can then turn governance into an attractor to what you're doing, the change you're trying to see across the organization. I worked with a logistics company in Germany, and one of their challenges was the security team. So security teams go hand in hand with governance, right? You're trying to make sure people can't get into your organization and be malicious. But by working with the security team, what we're trying to achieve is to say, well, actually, if you want access or you want people to access your APIs externally, you need to get the security team to rubber stamp it. If you use the Apogee API program, then the security team who's already rubber stamped it, so you will get to market faster by using the API platform if you roll it yourself. And that is an attractor to the program and also an example of where governance is helping accelerate the time to value.
That point about security being an obstacle to progress is a theme that we see with a lot of customers, and probably the top tip that we give to a lot of customers is around engaging with security organization early, getting security organization aware of and involved in the work that you're doing, whether it's API related or not. Getting them engaged early helps you as an organization to remove those blockers early.
So Rob, you mentioned four things. Could you summarize those four things again into maybe one word, two word bullets?
Sure. The four things. So the first one was empowerment and enablement over enforcement. So this is about being the teacher and the referee, not being the policeman. Mm-hmm. So guidance and support goes hand in hand with empower and enablement. So helping guide people to the right answers, leading by example, rather than a top-down approach to the right way of doing things. Third one was accelerating progress over slowing change. So what we were just talking about. And then the fourth one, trust and federation over centralized control. Scaling your governance program, you're never going to have enough people to govern. So how can you federate that across the organization and trust people to do the right thing?
Great. So let's break those down a little bit. What are some of the best practices around putting that guidance into place so that it's not necessarily some type of blocker for a development cycle? And specifically when we're talking about building out things like APIs and an API program to facilitate a lot of this development, how do we ensure that we're placing the right amount of guidance in that so that teams can be successful?
For me, it's a bit like Swiss public transport. Okay, using the other analogy. So Swiss public transport, highly efficient, and everybody uses it. Why? Kind of nudge theory. There's a constant set of nudges to do the right thing, to use the public transport. Things like it's cheap, it's readily available, it's well integrated. It's actually easier to get around somewhere like Zurich in the public transport system than it is to have your own car. With governance, you can look at it the same way. How can you add value to the organization and nudge people to do the right things, put guide rails around what people are going to do, rather than saying, you must do this. So, for example, providing startup kits. So how does somebody get started with an API and do the things right? Give them the tools they need to do it the right way. Here is a set of best practices, sample projects, solutions for common problems within the organization that will get you started on your API journey. Because you know what developers are like. I'm a developer or ex-developer. If I can copy and paste somebody else's solution into what I do, and that gets me started, and then I can iterate over it, that's where I'll start rather than trying to roll my own. So that's a great way of doing the right things. Apigee also gives you the ability to template APIs. So you, again, you can give people, here's an API proxy and a set of policies as a template for you to use off the bat. And then the last one is the use of our shared flows. So you can build into Apigee a set of called shared flows. So a set of policies around an API proxy that ensure people do the right things. For example, traffic management, right? You can build an API that can become wildly successful and take down your entire organization. We've seen a telco do exactly this. By having a shared flow that puts a traffic management policy, so whether it's spike arrest or something like that, then you can ensure that organization is protected and the developers don't even have to think about it. They haven't even been really aware of traffic management and suddenly they're protected by it. That's a great way of getting started on that journey.
To my mind, you alluded to a couple of things there. You talked a little bit about motivation and understanding people's motivation. For me, understanding why people aren't already doing the things that you want them to be doing and why they're not doing that is really important. If you can invest time in listening, in hearing concerns, in understanding what's driving behavior that you might not necessarily want to see, then you're in a great position to be able to start to have the sort of dialogue that you've already talked about, Rob. So very often, I think, particularly my background is kind of architectural, and very often architects within organizations can be seen as this kind of blue sky thinking type organization where they have great ideas, but it's not necessarily grounded in reality. So if you're in a position where you're looking to define these sorts of things within organizations, stopping, listening, understanding what motivates the people that are doing the work on a day-to-day basis and what's driving them to do the things that they're doing, that's a great starting point for you to then put together a set of principles, a set of guidelines that are genuinely valuable for your organization, not just something that is perceived as this solutions to problems.
So Andy, I think you just set up a great intro for the next topic, and it sounds like the start of a great joke too. A chief architect and a chief security officer walk into an office with the CEO. What happens? When we start talking about the next thing, which is trust, I think the CEO is looking at things one way, the chief security officer is looking at things another way, a chief architect is looking at things a third way, and then even add in people like the product and marketing teams. How do we build trust between these teams so that as we're trying to implement these governance opportunities, we can still bring these people together to ensure that we are ultimately reaching the successful outcome that we want, which is faster speed to market or meeting customer demands, et cetera?
So for me, that starts with understanding a shared goal. So understanding what it is that the people involved in that conversation are motivated to do. In the three roles that you just articulated, it starts with the CEO. It starts with what is the shared goal founded in business success? What does business success look like for this business? And being able to frame everything that you do in the context of whatever success for your organization looks like, whether that is increasing top line, whether it's about stemming attrition within your organization. There are all sorts of things that as a CEO, you might be looking to do within your organization. And in order to build trust within your teams, you need to be using a kind of common nomenclature, a common language that is founded in what the successful outcomes of the business are.
But you know, the CEO is going to say, I need this product or this service to go out to our customers next week. And we're facing this incredible disruption right now. And this has to go out now. And you've got your chief security officer saying, yeah, but we can't do it right now because there's this risk and this risk. And how do we ensure that we get everybody on that same page, that vision, and set up the technologies that we need in order to be able to fulfill that communication and that vision between the CEO and the security officers?
Picking up on what Andy was saying around strategy as well, it's important that everybody shares an understanding of what is critical to the organization. So if you're the security officer, of course, you're going to be naturally risk averse and your job depends on keeping the organization secure. But if you're not taking something to market, there's not going to be a job for you to keep secure if the organization isn't there. You've got to have that shared view as an organization. What is critical to us? And those are the things you should be governing as closely as possible. Things that are not critical or less critical are things you can then start to federate out and say, well, actually, this is what we care about. Other things, they're important, but let's let the teams around us worry about those. Hopefully, you've recruited some people that you trust, some smart, innovative people that can actually take those problems and go and come up with those own solutions to them. And you don't need to worry about those things happening at the central level. The other thing then is trust has to be earned. You don't automatically trust people. So earning things, you've got to see that something is working. How do you see that something is working? You've got to be able to measure it. You've got to start from a baseline and show that this has changed and it's changed for the better. Governance, therefore, has to be something that you can measure. If you can't measure the effectiveness of your governance, you've then got a massive problem. But to be honest, most of the time when I walk into an organization, it's not that they can't measure it. It's just they've never thought about measuring it.
Yeah.
Going back to what we're saying right at the start, what is governance? Governance is balancing the risk and the reward. How do you measure risk and how do you measure reward? In these senses, you can say, right, the risk is how often if we had to re-release something shortly after putting it out to the market in the first place. We put it out, we realized we made a mistake and we had to rush out a patch, rush out an emergency fix. How often are we doing that? That gives you an idea of the level of risk that you're running with at the moment. And then the reward, how quickly can we actually get that thing out to market in the first place? So if you can measure those two things, and there's a whole host of other metrics that we can talk around governance, but if you have those two things as your starting point and you can see we're doing less emergency patches, but we're maintaining or accelerating the frequency of our releases, the better. If that's going up, you're doing the right things.
One of the other metrics to your point, and one of the common themes that we've been talking about, is speed to market. And I think one of the misnomers is that governance is going to slow down my overall process. I think this gets to one of the next points of governance that you touched on at the beginning, which is automation. And I really feel automation is one of the biggest pieces of successful teams that really leverage governance to support their ability to mitigate risk and get to market faster. What really is automation when we relate it to governance?
The thing that jumps to mind is less about governance and more about the principles around automation. And the successful organizations seem to adopt a principle of automate everything. So don't just look to automate the things that are obvious, but look to automate absolutely everything. And don't automate by exception rather than as the rule. Very often, I think we tend to look at problems and we tend to lean towards those problems that have obvious solutions. Because when you understand what the solution to a problem is, it's very easy to go away and to do some work to materialize that. But they're not necessarily the most valuable solutions that we should be investing our time in. So I think we just need to be mindful of that and need to make sure that we prioritize where we invest our time in terms of automation and what we tackle first. But the goal should be to automate everything, because that gives you the ability to then be able to have the extreme agility that you need in order to be able to react to disruption in the market.
I love the concept of automate everything. Like, if we actually go back through, Rob, your points, for instance, the enforcement, the guidance, the trust, the acceleration to market, all of those can be automated.
Absolutely. If you're a developer building an API, What you want is rapid feedback if you're not doing the right thing. I'm an engineer by training, going back a long time now. And one of the things that was drilled into us fairly early on in our course is it's significantly cheaper for an organization to fix something at the design phase than it is in the development phase, than it is in the test phase, than it is once you've launched it. So as a developer, the fastest way to market has got to be to get that feedback as early on in the process as possible, whether you're doing the right things or not. So if we talk about automation of tools, we think about things like Linton checks, BDD, behavioral testing, building those test cases right at the start, following a Linton process right at the start, ensures that a developer gets that feedback and can therefore do the right thing as early as possible. And it then becomes habit, becomes habitual, baked into the process. And again, you're being nudged to do and to keep doing the right thing.
That notion of failing and failing being a positive thing, failing fast. I know a lot of people don't like the language. They don't like the use of the term fail. I actually love the word fail because to my mind, that failure is not a bad thing. It's a positive. It's a first attempt in learning. I love that as an expression of what failure is. To Rob's point, if you can do that as early in the cycle as possible, then you're absolutely going to be able to react more quickly and you're going to invest significantly less in those failures. But to my mind, having an environment and a culture where failure is genuinely seen as a positive within your organization and that you have a culture that allows people to experiment and fail, those things are kind of cornerstones of successful organizations and have a knock-on effect towards governance.
Kind of failures you're talking about there. There's the organizational visible failures. Something's gone massively wrong. Hopefully we're not going to get to that point. What we do want to do is get to the point that you've built something, you've tried it, and you're learning your lesson there. So the first test fails. That's a great learning point, right? What have I missed? The quality checks that are run on your APIs that you didn't quite get right. What have I learned? What am I going to make sure I improve on next time? Feeding that back into the cycle as early as possible is going to massively help your time to market, but also the quality of the product that you're actually going to be producing. Following the right standards, making sure there's consistency in how your APIs respond, what the APIs look like, the documentation that goes with them, is going to lead to a much better experience for the people consuming your APIs and therefore drive increased success as well as the time to market.
There's an attitude as well that's necessary, I think. So we very often talk about lessons, learning lessons. The number of times I've been involved in lessons learned sessions with organizations where they sit down, I could say where we, I've been a part of organizations that have run lessons learned sessions of this nature, where you sit down with the intention of understanding what happened, understanding what went wrong, and then changing the way you do things going forward. But the number of times I've been involved in sessions where actually what you do is you sit down, you talk brutally, honestly, and openly about what went wrong, and then you leave the room and you carry on doing what you were doing before. You always do what you've always done. You always get what you always got, right? You have to commit to learning from lessons, learning from the things that have happened previously, not just going through the motions.
As a leader in an organization, somebody that cares about governance, the outcomes, again, you have to set the example for that. You're right, Andy. I've been in those kind of meetings before where somebody senior said, right, that was an almighty mess up. We need to learn the lessons from this. You go through the process. You run a retrospective. You come up with a number of recommendations. People are determined to do the right thing going forwards. You then start to look to management to provide the support, whether that's resource or whatever else it is that you need from them. And management don't like what's being raised and start to shy away from it, or other priorities change. People don't carve out the time to implement the lessons learned, and things go back to how they were. And your acronym, I can't remember how many letters are on your acronym, Andy, but it's a great one. The governance is something that people have to foster and create. It's not enough that one person just wishes it into existence. There has to be people supporting it. One of the principles we talk about is funding it as a service. This is key to making it happen. You can't just lean down the organization to a point and expect to get good quality output with the minimal amount of risk and a high level of, or high cadence of releases and iterations. You have to fund it. It has to be led. Somebody has to say, right, this is important to us as an organization. I'm going to ensure that this happens. And as an organization, we're going to pay attention to it. We're going to measure it, and we're going to make it serve us rather than being something that's going to hinder us.
I think that's a great way to view this. And both of your points are incredibly valid. And I hope that resonates with some of the listeners today. Let's have a look at our question of the day. I actually think it relates pretty closely to what we were just talking about. Here's the question. How do I influence independent parts of the enterprise to join in a collective effort and adhere to our API best practices and standards? Rob, you were just touching on this.
I've been reading a book by a guy called Robert Cialdini called Persuasion, and it's proving a little bit of a difficult book to get through because I spend 5 minutes reading it, come up with a whole load of interesting new ideas from it, and run off and try and work out how to implement those in my daily and professional life. One of the things he talks about in the book is attractors. If you're trying to create change, then attracting people to the change you're wishing to see is what's really important. The theory goes that by pointing something out to people, that then becomes important, and what's important becomes causal in a change. Everybody's seen it, right? You're about to get a new car, you start researching new cars, and suddenly you see that car everywhere. Has the number of cars on the road changed? Has the number of types of car on the road differed massively? No. You're just suddenly aware of that type of car and you're thinking about it. So for governance, how do you get other people to do the right thing? You need to attract them to your program. How do you attract people? You need to show how governance is going to serve them and make their lives better. Going back to what we said right at the start, people generally start off seeing governance as a hindrance. It's a barrier. It's a blockade. It's going to get in the way and slow me down. If you can turn that around and go, actually, our program is well-governed, and the governance helps you do your job more quickly to get better results so you can be more successful, then hopefully you're going to come and use our services.
The way I'd thought about the question was from the perspective of the things that we talked about previously, which was understanding their motivation, understanding what's driving people to behave in the way that they behave, understand and ask questions around why people are not naturally doing the things that you want them to do, and then solve for their problems. Set what you want to do in the context of their problems for all the reasons that Rob has just clearly articulated. And I think the point about governance being perceived as a negative thing because it slows you down, I kind of think of that in terms of governance needs to slow you down enough so that you don't crash and die. That's really where you set the bar as an organization in terms of what the appropriate level of governance is. If your level of governance is slowing you down to the point where you can barely move, then you have a problem. Equally, if your level of governance isn't slowing you down at all, you're going to career down the hill, or you're going to crash into something, and there's a possibility you might die as a result. So to my mind, that idea that governance needs to slow you down just enough so that you don't crash and die is really important to get into people's psyche.
Thank you both for your time today. It's been a great conversation. I absolutely loved it.
Chris, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to learn more about the show, you can visit us at thatdigitalshowwithgoogle.com or throughout social media, all at thatdigitalshow. Thanks for listening.